Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, drama from radio's past. Later on, we hear Gene Herschelt as Dr. Christian. Right now, it's the Damon Runyon Theater, the 29th episode in the series, released for syndication on April 17, 1949. John Brown as character Broadway in the story, The Bloodhounds of Broadway.
The Damon Runyon Theater. Once again, the Damon Runyon Theater brings you another story by the master storyteller, Damon Runyon. And this one, The Bloodhounds of Broadway. And to tell it to you, here is Broadway.
Thanks. You know, at 4 a.m. along the main stem, one is apt to see many peculiar things. For example, it is about that time I am standing in front of Mindy's with Regret the horse player. We are talking of things, mostly nothing, when we hear something happening at the curb.
Oh, please, just a nightcap.
I said no.
It's early. It's only 4.
It is too late as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Clay. Good night.
Oh, no, wait a minute, baby.
I said good night.
I guess she says good night, Broadway.
She does it with a great deal of gusto.
I do not blame her in the least.
Regret, who is the citizen she does not wish any more part of?
Him? That is Marvin Clay. You know him.
Oh, yeah. He has plenty of scratch.
Yeah, from his father. Yeah, there is a guy like Marvin Clay who is loaded. Here is a guy like me who is the opposite.
Will you take his money if you have to be him?
That is something I do not care to offer an opinion on right now. Holy mackerel, Broadway, look at what is coming down this way.
From where I am standing, it looks like a citizen leading 2 ponies.
Broadway, those things are dogs.
Dogs? I never see dogs that big. It must be Glandula with them.
Now, what do you suppose that strange-looking character is doing with dogs this hour of the morning?
Well, we get our answer to that in a couple of seconds. Also, what happens with the dogs and Regret and Marvin Clay is more than somewhat interesting, because it includes the gendarmes, a shooting, and something that is strange indeed, which I will tell you about in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Bloodhounds of Broadway.
Like I am saying, Regret spots the dogs and the character who leads them with 2 long ropes. They get up to us, and Regret says as follows.
Hi there.
Me? You talking to me?
Uh-huh.
Oh. Hi.
Well, one thing about being up this early in the morning, the conversation is not long and dull.
So long.
Hey, wait a minute.
Me?
Yeah, you. What are those dogs you have got there?
Mine.
Yeah, well, what kind are they?
Bloodhounds.
They have got ears like bedsheets.
How old are they?
Coming on 3. The yellow one's Nip and the brown one's Tuck.
Ah, 3 years old, huh? What's the matter with them?
Nothing. Why?
Well, they are very wrinkled. Nip there especially. He looks like he has many things on his mind.
Yep. That's Tuck.
How are you, Tuck?
Why does he make that noise, huh?
He smells food. He ain't et in 2 days.
Well, then get him away from my legs.
Nip's hungry, too. Come to think of it, so am I.
Wait a minute. Wait, you mean these poor animals do not eat for 2 days?
That's the size and parcel of it, mister.
I do not like to see animals suffer. What do they eat?
Tain't particular. Long as it'll taste something like food.
Nip is looking at me. I do not like that.
Won't hurt you none, mister. Lesson you done something. They is man-tracking bloodhounds. Follow a man from one end of earth to other.
How do you like that? Gendarmes with fleas.
Tell you what. I do not like to see animals suffer. Now, you bring them in, Mindy's, and I will set them up to some food.
I'm hungry, too.
Okay, come on.
Hey, wait a minute, Regret. You are not figuring to take them Shetland ponies in, Mindy's.
Why not? Guess it won't hurt them. Come on.
Well, several sirloin steaks later, plus borscht, goulash, soup, and various other articles of food, John Wangle, it turns out this is the citizen's name, wipes his mouth on his sleeve and settles back. Nip and Tuck are full too, and are now sleeping with their ears over their eyes. Wangle tells us how he happens to be in New York with man-tracking bloodhounds from Georgia.
Well, mister, I brung Nip and Tuck north with old-time Uncle Tom's cabin show. Show went plumb bust. And me and the dogs did, too. First meal I had in 2 days.
Why do you not go back to Georgia?
Got no money.
Well, do you ever think of selling the dogs?
Sell Nip and Tuck? Not on your life, mister. They is the finest man-tracking hounds in the country.
Is there very much of a market for that work?
Nope.
Is there nobody you are able to write to, a relative?
Well, yep, my uncle's a sheriff. But I can't write.
Oh.
Come to think of it, wouldn't do me no good to write him anyway.
Why not?
He can't read.
I see. Well, what do you plan to do, Mr. Wangle?
I don't know. Make out best I can, I reckon.
Yeah, I hate to see animals suffer. Tell you what, Mr. Wangle, you drop by here now and then. I'll take care of the food.
That's right nice of you, mister. Maybe me and the dogs will be able to pay you back someday. That's Nip. Dreaming again. Dreaming of tracking somebody down.
Hi, Nip. Nice.
Mister, if you ever need anybody tracked down, just call on me and Nip and Tuck. We'll find whoever you want, no matter where.
Uh-huh. Meantime, where do you live?
Well, we've been staying at a public park north of here, but seeing as how Mr. Regret has taken an interest, I figure maybe moving in closer to town will be just about right.
So Regret, because he is very soft-hearted about animals, takes the bloodhounds under his wing. But it seems that now he has to take the grub out on the sidewalk because Mindy objects. Naturally, Nip and Tuck grow very fond of Regret. So does John Wangle, because all three of them are beginning to fat out very nicely. In fact, in several days, the bloodhound's ribs become practically invisible, where before they stick out like bones on a well-picked heron. Then, it comes up one night, and I am with Regret in the 300 Club, where the scene is as follows.
Now I ask you, Broadway, this is the life, huh?
It is all right.
Wonderful music. Beautiful dolls.
Yeah, speaking of dolls, is that not Miss Lovey Lou sitting over there?
Huh? Yeah, it is. And soak me for a herring if she is not with Marvin Clay. Broadway, it frightens me when I think of a very nice doll like Lovey Lou being with a heel like Marvin Clay.
Well, he is a very well-heeled heel. Miss Lovey Lou is not one to overlook fine points like that.
I will thank you not to talk about Lovey in that manner.
Oh, it seems like you take an interest in her.
I am interested, yes. I am interested. What is happening over there?
It seems to me that Marvin Clay wants to dance without getting up.
Why, dirty. I'm going to put a stop to it.
It is none of your business, Regret.
I'll make it mine.
Do not be a sap.
I'm going to smash his ever-loving face into pieces. Come on.
Regret, do not bother yourself.
It is no bother. It is more like a play.
You will be bounced out of here.
Please behave
yourself.
Come on, Lovey Lou. It's all right, everyone. Just a little accident. That is all.
Regret? That was wonderful.
Oh, it is nothing, Lovey. Any time at all.
Regret? I think you are in trouble.
Me? Why?
Marvin Clay is not the kind of a citizen who will take this laying down.
Then I will see that he lays down. Meanwhile, I have a dance with Miss Lovey Lou. How about it, Lovey?
I think that'll be just lovey.
It will be just lovey, she says. And it is. It seems regret falls for Miss Lovey Lou. And for the next week, he sees a great deal of her. In fact, he cannot miss, because she is in the floor show at the 300 Club, and one is able to see a great deal of all the dolls there. Anyway, it seems he forgets all about John Wangle and Nip and Tuck for some days. Then it comes up one morning, and I am again standing in front of Mindy's at about 4 a.m., when I see somebody coming toward me. And who is it but a police inspector by the name of McNamara? And he says to me...
Ah, morning, Broadway.
Good morning, Mac. What brings you out before the sun?
Trouble, trouble, nothing but trouble.
What is this particular trouble?
Looking for a friend of yours.
That gives you trouble?
In this case, yeah. Broadway, where's Regret?
Regret? Why, I do not see him for almost a week. In fact, it is about a week.
Sure?
Sure.
Well, I guess you're telling the truth.
Is there any particular reason you are out this early looking for Regret?
Well, yeah, I guess you could call it a particular reason.
I see. Like I say, I do not see him.
Yeah, like you say. Guess I gotta tramp all over town to get him.
Oh, he could be in any one of several hundred places. But you do not yet tell me why you look for him.
You know Marvin Clay?
I hear of him, yeah, but I am not on speaking terms.
Have a fight?
No, I just do not know him well enough.
I see. How about Regret?
Regret?
You remember Regret. We just talked about him a couple of seconds ago.
What about him and Marvin Clay?
Well, it seems that Regret and Clay had a few words about a week ago. And from what I heard, Regret gave Clay five fingers in a knot.
So?
So about an hour ago, I got a call to see a man who was shot.
Shot? With a gun?
It seems reasonable to draw that conclusion. Seeing as how there were some holes in Mr. Marvin Clay.
Clay? And Regret?
I got to ask Regret a few questions, and I... What is a steamboat doing up this far?
Those are dogs. A bloodhound.
Holy cats, look at the size of them.
Morning, Broadway. Take it easy, Nip, now. Settle down, Tuck. Settle down.
Get those horses off the side.
Yeah, yeah, you better run along, Wangle.
He ain't here again, huh?
No, he is not here, but he will be later. No, run along. Here, take this bob and buy something.
We sure miss Regret.
Regret? Regret the horse player?
Best friend man a dog ever had.
Wait a minute. You know Regret?
Just slightly, Inspector. The dogs have a sniffing acquaintance.
Shut up, Broadway. You, what's your name?
Wangle. Why?
These are bloodhounds, aren't they?
Best man trackers in the whole world.
Yeah. Well, now run along, Wangle.
I told you to shut up. Wangle, these dogs know Regret pretty well.
Why, I reckon Nip and Tuck could sniff out Regret from all the people in the whole world.
Suppose Regret had been someplace and had gone. Could these dogs track him down?
Mister, even if the trail's more than a day old, they can do it.
Okay. Here's where I save some legwork. Come along.
Where to?
You want to find Regret, right?
Wangle, do not listen
Shut
to
up. How about it, Wangle?
Mister, you could just show Nip and Tuck where Regret was last, and they'll get to him in no time at all.
So, that is that. I figure Regret is crooked. And what comes after is something that the main stem will never forget. And how it ends is quite a story, which I will tell you in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Bloodhounds of Broadway.
there we go, off into the cold, gray morning. McNamara has it no other way than I go along. I do not know why, but there I am at 4:15 a.m., tearing along behind Nip and Tuck, who are taken to the scene of the shooting. They sniff around, then both of them put out about a yard of tongue, dig in, and the next thing I know, we are a sight to behold indeed. Nip and Tuck are leading. Behind them is John Wangle holding the lead ropes. Then comes Inspector McNamara, and then me, followed by 10 gendarmes.
Hey, Wangle, slow him down a little.
Mister, when Nip and Tuck are after somebody, they go like grease lightning.
Poor Regret. And after all he does for those flea circuses.
Yeah, saves me plenty of legwork. Wangle, sure those dogs are going in the right direction?
Mister, they ain't never made no mistake in their whole life. If Mr. Regret went this way, they know it.
If it is all the same to you, Mac, I will get off here.
You're going along, Ron. You're going to help me find it.
Hey, they stop, mister. This is where Mr. Regret is.
Why, there's nothing but an old garage.
Can't have it, mister. Nip and Tuck know this is where he is.
Quiet him down.
Sure, Nip, Tuck. Quiet now. Easy now. Easy.
What is Regret doing in this old garage?
What do you think? Hiding out. Boys, spread out. Kelly, Rabinowitz, get around to the back. Burton, take three men, cover the sides of this place. Rest of you back me up when I go in the front here.
Where do you want me, Mac? Home?
Keep off to one side. Regret's got a rod. Now, careful, boys. You're going in after a desperate man. All right? Take off. Okay. Here we go, boys. Wolf, kick open that door. If it ain't open, shoot it open. All right, Regret, get covered. Cut the gun.
What am I?
Stand where you are. Stand still, every last man of you.
Well. A crap game. Maybe you guys ain't read the law about it.
But where is Regret?
Mister, Nip and Tuck want to get going again. Mr. Regret ain't here, but he was.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go in a minute. First, I want to take down some names of certain citizens who are breaking the law by shooting craps. Line up. Line up and give your right names.
Well, McNamara makes this haul, and we take off again with Nip and Tuck leading the way. They make stop after stop. By this time, there is quite a crowd following, because it is by no means a usual thing to see a troop of gendarmes chasing after two bloodhounds who have got their bellies close to the papers. Every now and then, the dogs let loose with those loud wails, and the result is a lot of citizens hurt themselves leaping from windows and fire escapes, figuring somebody's after them. Then Nip and Tuck make another stop, and the scene is as follows.
Look, Wangle, this is the 18th stop we've made. Where is Regret?
I can't help it, mister. Every place Nip and Tuck stopped, Regret was there.
He is quite busy. So far, we break up three crap games, two poker parties, various and sundry other illegal enterprises, and etc. Wangle, these dogs are nothing but stool pigeons.
I can't help it, Mr. Broadway. I go where Nip and Tuck go.
All right, Wangle. We'll try this joint.
Hey, wait a minute. This is no joint. This is where Miss Maud Milligan lives.
So?
She is Big Sam's friend. And I wish no part of being any place that Big Sam might be.
We're going in. All right, boys. Once more. This may be it. Spread out.
Your gendarmes are becoming pretty tired, man.
Oh, shut up. All right, Wolf. Give the buzzer a punch.
Yeah, who is it?
Open up, Maud. Inspector McNamara.
Hey, what's the idea? Waking me up in the middle of the night.
Open up or we'll break the door in. Take that chain off. Get ready, boys. All right, Wangle, let him loose.
Elephants!
Wangle, quiet him down. Get him quiet.
Nip, talk down now, down. Settle down, boys.
Well, those ain't no things to scare a girl with at 5 a.m. You get him out of here.
Where is he, Maud?
You get him out. Huh? Who?
Quit stalling. I want Regret.
Are you kidding? Oh, I ain't heard nothing like that in my whole life. And he's looking at me.
Listen, Maud, I want Regret.
Guess he ain't here either, mister.
What? Listen, Wangle.
I can't help it. But they want to get going. Come on.
Well, then you let them. And you, McNamara, I'm going to see my alderman, the mayor, and maybe the governor about this.
No,
you've got no right breaking in here and making a zoo out of my apartment.
Look,
I'm going to sue you. I'll have you thrown off the force. I'll see the newspaper boys and tell them how you go around with... Will somebody tell me what they are?
Bloodhounds, Maud.
Well, I ain't Eliza, and I ain't never been an ice skater. Now get up.
All right, Maud, all right. Don't get sore. Just a mistake.
Well, don't you ever make another one like it.
Well, McNamara gets out. So do Nip and Tuck. By this time, McNamara is no dog lover, and I know he never will be. But he gives Wangle one more chance to find Regret or get thrown in the tank for obstructing justice. So off we go again. And we end up at the Club 300. And this time, it is the end of the trail. Because sitting over at a table with Miss Lovey Lou is nobody but Regret. Nip and Tuck take one look, and before anybody knows what happens, they are across the floor and practically in his lap, licking his face. Mac is right after them.
Here he is, boys. Get him.
Hey, what is going on?
Oh, look! The central fire's going from me!
Oh, Wangle, call him off. Get him away from me.
And all this comes from being kind to animals. If you are able to think of how I can stop 11 coppers, do so now or forever hold your peace.
Oh, it's all my fault. It's all my fault.
Maybe so, but it is too late to think about it now.
You don't understand, Broadway. Regret didn't shoot Marvin Clay, I did.
Oh, sure. Huh? Listen, come over away from this real fast. Come on. Now, what is this you say?
It's true. It's true, he's a heel.
Maybe so, but there is a law against shooting even heels.
What'll they do to Regret?
Does Regret know you shoot Clay?
No. What'll they do to Regret?
What do you think?
Broadway, it was an accident. I swear it was an accident. I found out he was going out with my baby sister.
I never know you have one.
I do. I went to see Marvin Clay. He laughed. He took a gun out of a drawer and said I had to get out. And I got mad. I slapped him and there was a fight. The gun went off.
Yeah, I see. But what about Regret?
Broadway, I'll tell him what really happened.
Then you better hurry up before one of two things happens. Either he is taken to the pokey, or he is swallowed by those dogs. Well, a few minutes later, they untangle Regret from Nip and Tuck. By this time, he is pretty done in. But Wangle says the dogs are just playing. Now, this is not the end of the story. In fact, there is quite a bit more. And I will tell you the payoff in just a minute. Like I say, Regret is untangled from the door. McNamara arrests him, but Miss Lovey Lou comes forward with her story. The upshot is the whole bunch are taken to headquarters, including me. Well, of course, I am released because I am just an innocent bystander. Well, it is 2 days after all this that I am sitting in Mindy's when in comes Regret, all dressed up, and he has two suitcases with him. He sits down and says...
Hello, Broadway.
Regret, I am glad to see you.
I am leaving town, Broadway.
I see you are carrying suitcases. And it seems to me you look more than somewhat nervous.
Uh-huh. I'm just killing time before I leave.
How does the whole thing turn out, Regret?
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I hear that Marvin Clay is not dead. Also that he does not prosecute Miss Lovey Lou.
Yeah, that is correct. Because he does not want unfavorable publicity.
Sure, sure. By the way, what becomes of Wangle and Nip and Tuck?
Oh, they are ingrates. But they are sent back to Georgia. It seems some of the boys take up a collection which sets them up for life. Because they are very dangerous to have around here. They get plenty of people in trouble the night they look for me.
Yeah, they do. I can see why certain citizens would rather take chances with the gendarmes than with Nip and Tuck.
Exactly. So, I am leaving town for a while.
Oh, you and Miss Lovey Lou are going on a honeymoon?
Uh-uh. I am through with Miss Lovey Lou.
What? But she saves you from trouble. You know she does not have to say anything. You are the logical suspect for the gendarmes to collar, and it would be tough for you.
I know. But I do not like to be married to any doll who handles a rascal, even by accident. Think what would happen.
Yeah, I see what you mean. But then, why are you leaving town?
Broadway, what is the last stop Nip and Tuck make before they find me?
Crap Game, the poker... Oh, Maud Milligan's place.
Uh-huh. Well, Big Sam is out of town at the time. But I hear he is coming back. Now, I am going to leave town for a while because maybe if he hears about Nip and Tuck going to Maud's place, Big Sam might get the wrong idea. Goodbye, Broadway.
And so ends the famous Damon Runyon story, The Bloodhounds of Broadway. Listen in again next week for The Damon Runyon Theater. The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville, and the story is adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. Vern Carstensen is in charge of production. This is a Mayfair production.
The Damon Runyon Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 17, 1949, released by Mayfair Syndication, actor Alan Ladd's foray into radio production. Not only was this series released through that name, but also his noir-style radio show, Box 13. It's an hour of drama. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now Screen Actors Guild legend and humanitarian Gene Herschelt stars as Dr. Christian. The CBS episode from February 21st, 1951, co-stars Rosemary DeCamp in the play The Other One.
It's a life-size play. It is called The Other One, and it is the work of a Negro writer, M. Carl Holman, who is professor of English at Clark College, Atlanta, Georgia. Gene Herschelt is starred as Dr. Christian with Rosemary DeCamp in the role of Judy Price. The opening scene is the doctor's familiar office, and there's the phone ringing now.
Dr. Christian's office. Oh, hello, Mrs. Thompson. But Dr. Christian's gone to the hospital already, but you needn't worry. He's going to do everything he can. That's right. And stop worrying about the chief of police. Dr. Christian will handle him all right.
I've been here in this hospital for almost 2 hours now, and nobody's let me say a word to this boy, Edward. After all, it's my duty.
Duty? Yes, Chief, but I have a duty, too. Now, I would say that in line with your duty, you should be down at the jail, perhaps, talking with Randolph.
Randolph? Oh, now, listen, Dr. Christian. I've heard enough from Edward about protecting this brother of his without you starting to. I haven't got time to play games.
All I'm trying to say is that your concern has to be with wrongdoing and punishment. And if that is so, then you're interested in Randolph, the criminal.
But I need to get the truth out of Edward.
You must believe me when I say, best thing for you, for the girl's family and the people who want to do something sensational and wrong, is to let me handle Edward in the way that seems best to me. Because, you see, whatever Randolph is, Edward... sick boy, and it is my duty to help those who are sick.
All right, doctor. We'll let you have your way for a while. But I still can't see why a boy not even running a temperature now can't answer a few questions.
Oh, he'll answer questions, Chief, I believe.
Yes, one lie after another.
Yes, for a while. But if Randolph can't be counted on to tell us what we need to know, then we must depend on Edward.
Huh.
And if I'm right about Edward... he won't go online, Chief. Not if we can be made to see that someone trusts him.
Dr. Christian, you won't take the medicine. I tried 3 times, but it's no use.
Hello there, Edward. Feeling better today?
it's you, Doctor. You've got to help. They're trying to give me some of that stuff. Truth serum. I'm not going to help them hang Randolph, my own brother.
You're very fond of your brother Randolph, aren't you?
Fond? Fond of Randolph? Well, he... You know... He's my brother. I understand him.
So therefore you like him?
Well, it's not exactly a matter of... Yes, sure I like Randolph. But the thing is, you see, I understand him. He's my brother, and blood is thicker than water. Blood...
Yes. Go on, Ed. Why do you stop?
That word. I don't like that word. You're always trying to get me to tie it up with Randolph, but I won't do it.
Well, don't think about it. Think about something else.
Something else? Sure. I don't even have to think about it. Doc.
Yes?
I have to tell you about the bird. The bird I hit one day with a slingshot. I wasn't meaning to do it. I was just a kid. I just let go, never thinking I'd hit it. And when it fell, I wanted to run away. But not Randolph. He picked it up in his hand and just held it there. Listen, he said to me. Feel it. Feel the funny way the heart's beating. You ever hear anything so trembly and so fast? I guess it was then I started watching it.
Watching Randolph, you mean? Why?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes Randolph worried me. Things he'd do, you know. Things he'd say. He was always a hard one to understand. Lots of people never understood him.
But you understood him, Edward?
Sure I did. I could have told him to watch out for Randolph. But they didn't understand him. Like Uncle Jake. He'd be glad, all right, to see something happen to Randolph.
Well, why? What happened between Uncle Jake and Randolph?
He was in Garrity's bar. Randolph was going by, and Uncle Jake called him in. His first time in a bar was for Randolph. Uncle Jake was already in his cup.
Randolph, my boy. Hey, the Niagara Province is where you happen to belong. You see, I'd forgotten about the day. Slipped my mind altogether. But today, all right, the 19th, the last day.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Insurance. Gussie's insurance. Today is the last day of grace. Gussie had to leave in a rush Tuesday for Quincy, and she left the money with me to pay the premium.
What'd you call me in for?
I want you to do me a favor. Just take this envelope and mail it for me. They got to get the money order first, you see. Now, wait. Here's the money. $60. Hurry now. Make the money order out just the way you see the address here on the envelope. Hey, your Uncle Jake will never forget you for this. And, here's a dollar for you.
A whole dollar just for me. Why, thank you, Uncle Jake. Thank you very much.
So, Randolph mailed the insurance money for your Uncle Jake? Now, that seems to make Randolph look like not such a bad fellow after all, doesn't it?
All it'll do is make Randolph look bad in court.
What is it that Randolph did?
Well, Uncle Jake didn't find out himself until about a week later. Mom couldn't figure why Cousin Gussie was so excited.
But Gussie, Jake, I don't understand all this.
I keep telling Gussie there's been some downfall mistake in the insurance office. Get the boy, he'll tell you.
All I know is that the letter from the insurance company says the policy has lapsed. They say I didn't pay within the grace period. Jake claims...
Claims, I don't claim a thing. I tell you, I was in Garrity's and I saw the boy pass the window...
You wanted me, Bob?
Well,
oh, hello, Cousin Gussie, Uncle Jake.
Here we are. Now, boy, will you put an end to Gussie's foolishness? You wouldn't happen to have that receipt in your pocket somewhere, would you?
Receipt?
Yeah. The little tag from the money order.
Is this some kind of joke, Mom?
Oh, Gussie, now listen to me.
I've been listening. I'm listening to the boy now. Listen, son, did Jake give you $60 to mail to the insurance company Saturday?
I don't know what this is all about. I haven't even seen Uncle Jake in 2 or 3 weeks.
So Randolph never mailed the money. And he was proud, I guess, because he had put something over on Uncle Jake, huh?
He took the money. And Randolph's gonna die because...
Because he... what, Edwin?
Because of her.
You mean the girl?
Yes. The girl. Because of what he did to her.
And what did Randolph do to the girl, Edwin?
I can't talk about it anymore, Doctor. I just can't.
Randolph couldn't spend all that insurance money on movies, could he, Edward? What else did he do with the money?
He bought the sport jacket.
The sport jacket? But didn't you tell the chief of police that you didn't know anything about the sport jacket?
He was trying to hurt Randolph. But Mom was telling the truth when she said she'd never even seen the jacket. The man down at the store told Randolph the jacket made him look like a college man. And nobody at the school had a jacket like that. Not even Jip Jennings.
Jip Jennings, the football player?
Yeah, but he didn't have a jacket like Randolph's. See, what Randolph did was keep the jacket in his locker at school so nobody around home could ask questions. He'd wear it around school all day until time to go home. And people noticed it all right. Why, even she.
You mean the girl, Ed?
Sure. She noticed how different he looked. That he wasn't just a drip. Her locker was next to his. And one day after assembly, she spoke to him.
Hi there.
Oh, hello.
Say, isn't that a new jacket you're wearing?
Yeah, I guess. Yes, it is.
Oh, it's smooth. I mean, honest, it's really handsome.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, Miriam.
Oh, well, see you around.
Sure. What she said, Doctor. And it wasn't the only time she talked with him either. He started writing her name in his notebook. Miriam. Miriam Winslow. The one they call that popular redhead in the school paper. The girl they're talking about now in the newspaper, even when they don't use her name.
You say Randolph is smart, Edward, but does he always really look out for you?
Sometimes he'll do something, but, well, it's pretty rough. Like that day in the school cafeteria. I was talking to some of the fellas when Jip Jennings came over.
Hiya, fellas. Say, Eddie, I was wondering if you could tell me what time it is.
What time? Sure. I mean, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You've got a watch, haven't you? Sure he's got a watch. Started to pull his sleeve back just now and look at it. We saw it from the table across the aisle. Come on, Eddie, let's have a look.
Say, what's the matter, you guys?
Sure, he's got a watch.
Recognize it, Jip?
That's it, all right. Where'd you get the watch, Eddie?
Who are you guys trying to pull? Who do you think you are, huh? Somebody gave me this watch.
That's Chris's watch, Eddie. I helped his dad pick it out for him.
Yeah. And when I came out of gym Tuesday to get my things out of the locker room, it was gone.
I'm not even in your lousy gym class.
Yeah, but you take gym the next hour. I found out that...
All right, take it easy, Chris. No point making a big thing out of this. Your watch, all right. Eddie says somebody gave it to him. Maybe somebody did. All he's got to do now is tell us who gave him the watch. That's the guy you ought to be sore at.
All right. Well, who gave it to you, Eddie?
Here. Take a crummy watch. And if you think I'm going to tell you anything, you're crazy.
And it wasn't just that time either, was it, Edward? You had to take the rap, so to speak, for Randolph before, haven't you?
But you don't understand how strong Randolph can be, Doctor. You just don't understand. He liked to call himself the Kid. Sometimes he called himself the Great Geronimo. Or sometimes he said the craziest... No, I don't mean crazy. Funny. He'd say these funny things. Eddie, my boy... Say, Eddie.
Eddie, my boy. Nobody knows my name. Not really. Nobody at all. You think Mom gave me my name? Yeah. I had to be named Randolph. Had to be. I remember the first time I saw that name in a book. Randolph. Randy. My name. A name for me. I'm no ordinary nobody. I'm not like you, Lieutenant. I'm a handsome guy. And smart. I got plans I haven't even started working on yet. I don't have to play football. Football is for drips like Chip Jennings. I'm going to do great things. I can be the greatest. You realize that? Writing books and symphonies. There's never been a movie like the movies I can make. Lights. Action. Camera.
Girls. Pretty girls.
And horses. Guns. And technicolor. The music rocking you out of your seat, Eddie.
And blood.
Blood everywhere.
Eddie. Gotta shut up. All I'm doing is making it hard for Randolph. Randolph, why do you have to make it so tough?
All right, Eddie. It's going to be all right. You do see, don't you? You're beginning to see that it's Eddie you're going to have to start thinking about. That Randolph is bad for you. Always has been.
I don't know, Doctor. I can't figure. Keep thinking about what happened to the girl and that stuff in the papers and Randolph in jail. What kind of cellar they got him in. I keep trying to see it in my head, what it must look like, but I can't.
Try forgetting about Randolph and thinking about Eddie for a change. Try to see this whole thing in terms of Eddie and what would be best for him. Will you do that, Eddie?
Forget about Randolph.
Think about
Doctor. Oh, yes, I talked to the girl's parents. Chief Armstrong says a knife has been found.
You don't say? And don't tell me they found it just where you suggested it might be.
That's where it was, all right. Chief says he should have hired me away from you a long time
ago. Oh, not on your life. But at least maybe it'll help persuade the chief to do the thing our way. Remember now to tell the others to be ready. And to do and say just what I ask.
All right, Doctor.
You have got to get it all straight in your mind, Eddie. It's your only chance of helping Randolph, of helping your mother. Now, let's go back to the jacket, son. Your mother, remember, said she couldn't understand about the jacket. I'd never seen it until the morning after the thing happened. She went upstairs and saw the jacket.
Yeah, I know that's right, because she came up the steps to ask Randolph why he hadn't come down. He'd be late for school. She saw the jacket.
But where did this come from, son? And where were you last night? Where did you go?
Let me alone, please, Mom. I can't stand all those questions.
Oh, the doorbell. Go downstairs and catch it for me. It may be the man about the stove.
No, I can't go down. I can't go. I've looked in the rack to make sure, and it's not there. The knife's not there.
What knife are you talking about? You confuse me so. Wait. After I go and see who's at the door, I want to have a talk with you.
No, Mom, don't do it.
Don't do what? What's wrong?
Don't go to the door, Mom. Let them think nobody's home. They'll go away if nobody answers the door.
They? What they are you talking about?
The police. It's the police, Mom. Now, don't let them in. Please.
Randolph had been that night. But you knew, didn't you, Eddie? You've known all the time. Even when you said you didn't.
No, there was a pavilion. It wasn't supposed to happen the way it did, but after he sent her the note...
The Winslow girl, you mean? But what note was that? The only note we've been told about is the one signed by the other boy. The boy you mentioned before, the football player, Gib Jennings.
That was just the way Randolph figured it out.
Oh, then it was Randolph, not Gib, who wrote the note the girl got the day before.
Yes, but he didn't mean to do anything wrong, Doctor. He didn't mean to touch you, even. Doctor, I don't want to...
I'll help you, Eddie. He asked her to meet him there in the park a block from her house. And not to say anything to her parents or anyone else. He wanted to talk with her.
Oh, sure, just to talk to her. And he took his jacket out of the locker and brought it home under his top coat.
So when he slipped out of the house a little before 9, I guess it was, he was wearing the jacket.
Nick, see if I... Oh, I didn't see you at first. It's so dark. I was so scared I started back home twice. Dick? Oh, but you aren't Dick. You're that Thompson boy.
Now, wait a minute, Miriam. Miriam, I had to talk to you sometime away from the others.
But Dick wrote me a note. Where's Dick?
Stop talking about Dick. I sent you the note. Hey, look. I had something I want to give you. A beautiful necklace.
Where'd you get a thing like that? I've got to go now. My folks...
All I ask is for you to wear this necklace. So you'll be my girl. Let me put it around you.
Stay away from me. I'm going home.
Now, wait a minute. Don't get excited. Somebody in the street. Just let me put it on.
Let me go. I don't want
it. Come back. I'm trying to be nice.
Let me go. Please. I'll scream. I will.
Don't scream, Elizabeth. I don't want to hurt you, you know. I know they've all been turning you against me. Why can't it be like the day you told me my jacket was handsome? I'm wearing it now. Miriam?
You're hurting me. What are you going to do? Don't kill me. Please,
no. No, now, don't fight.
Miriam, don't fight. No.
And
no.
Listen to me. Tell me something quickly. Why did the girl say, don't kill me? Why did the girl scream? Wasn't it because she was frightened?
Because Randolph had the knife. Because he took the knife with him.
That's not true, Eva.
Not true.
No. Because I know where the knife is. And Judy knows. And your mother.
She found the knife. I told you, Randolph. I told you to tell me where it was so I could get rid of it. Now, Randolph, you're going to kill me. Why did you have to do it? He wouldn't let me get that jacket in the locker.
Where was the jacket when your mother saw it?
I remember, Doctor. But I can't understand that. It was on the foot of my bed. And the shirt, too. Why did Randolph wear my shirt? That place she tore in it.
That's what you're going to tell me, Edward.
I remember waking up that morning and seeing those things in my bed. How could he sleep with those things in the room? In front of the mirror, see his face. It made me sick. It made me sick.
But why?
Why? Because I was afraid. Randolph liked me. He never told me he was going to use the knife, but he did. It was Randolph. Randolph killed him. And now all because of him, they want to get me in a court. Well, I'm finished with Randolph. Finished.
But can you get along without Randolph? Didn't you say he was a wonderful brother?
He was the funniest brother a guy ever had. Judy.
Yes, Doctor.
I think we can bring them in now.
What are you going to do, Doctor?
It's not so much what I'm going to do, it, but what you're going to do. You've been caring about a great brother. And I think it's about time you rid yourself of it. Your mother will be here. That's why she's coming in. And there will be others.
I'm not afraid of any of them.
And you believe we want to help you?
Yes.
Oh, hello there, Mr. Thompson.
Eddie, I want you to look at me.
What are you trying to do to me? It's the knife. The knife. You...
Wait a minute, son. Listen to me. You looked for this knife in the rack that morning, and it wasn't there. We found the knife yesterday. I'd thrown it out with the trash by mistake 2 days before you looked in the rack and noticed it wasn't there.
Your mother
isn't trying to cover up, Edward. She had no idea where the knife was. I was the one who took a guess and suggested looking for the knife out there in the ash pit.
So you see, Edward, there are explanations for things that don't have to be dark and terrible. Look over there, on the door.
Wait a minute, Doctor.
Hello? Hello, Edward.
Miriam, it's you. But it can't be. He killed you. You screamed, and so he took out the knife.
No, I just don't see it. I screamed because I was scared. And after I screamed, I broke away and ran. You didn't do anything to me, Eddie. You didn't hurt me at all.
What do you mean? I didn't. What does she mean, Doctor?
What did she
see her.
Me, me. She said I was the one. She said I didn't hurt her. Tell her about Randolph, Doctor. Tell her.
You tell her, Edward. Tell all of us. Tell us where Randolph is now.
Randolph? Is he?
I don't see him. Who is this Randolph, son?
Don't be afraid.
There wasn't any Randolph.
I was Randolph.
Good evening, Doctor. Well, that was one fine job you did this afternoon, whether you want to hear about it or not.
I'm glad it's all over. I would rather handle half a dozen operations than tackle one case like that.
Mm. You make me think of that line from Macbeth. Canst thou minister to a mind diseased?
Ah, pretty tough question, Judy. And I don't mind saying that there is a sense of achievement in being able to answer, even in a limited and perhaps rather amateurish way. Yes. Yes, I think so.
Dr. Christian, on Tuned to Yesterday with Gene Hersholt, from February 21st, 1951 on CBS. That brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.